it's so who I am. Gosh, I love creating businesses and I love being an entrepreneur.
Howdy and welcome to Preoccupied, where we have the jankiest recording setup ever used for a podcast. We are currently leaning over a coffee table as we enjoy that we can be back together in person, fully vaccinated and able to record safely outside of Zoom.
A very disgusting coffee table that has been holding my entire life for the past year and a half, pretty much. And
I mean, isn't that true of all of our coffee tables?
Yeah, very metaphorically heavy load to be lifting for coffee tables.
For sure.
Let's see. But we have been able to do some interviews, as you all know, and those will probably be remote for a while, but not just for the reason you think, but also because we've been able to talk to people from all over the country with this new remote technology being at everybody's fingertips, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, today we're talking with Dr. Kizzy Parks out of Florida.
Yeah, but of course, she's a Michigan native through and through.
Oh, of course.
But it's just a coincidence.
Yep. Dr. Parks, as you'll soon find out, majored in psychology and then went for her master's and PhD in industrial organizational psychology. But now she does something very different with it. Maddie, you want to tell us a bit about that?
Now she is an entrepreneur, and she actually has a couple businesses, but one that we talk a lot about is one in which she helps small businesses get and fulfill their government contracts, which is basically, I didn't know what it was before meeting her, but basically a government contract is when the government or the military is basically your customer, right?
I mean, both as far as like manufacturing things, so maybe like a government contract might involve producing ambulances for the military or something like that, like made to order from an auto company. One that Dr. Parks mentioned working with is that the FDA doesn't want to have to go and check up on all of the recreational marijuana stores. So they contract that out and hire people to go inspect those places.
Right, because you can't have a whole branch of marijuana inspection, right? Like,
you could. It would just be marvelously inefficient.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. More red tape, right?
So exactly.
So it's kind of like a new, totally new sector for Preoccupied to be diving into is like this business side of things. And I think you'll be really interested. Me and Zenon certainly were. Like, it's just a totally different structure, totally different strengths you get to use than being in like an academic profession or a counseling profession, you know. So I think it'll be pretty interesting for you guys. We're kind of looking for a fit that maybe looks a little bit less like the ones that we've been exploring so far.
And yeah, this is going to be a pretty short introduction because Dr. Parks honestly speaks for herself.
Yeah.
So we're going to let you hear that and go right into this interview.
Hello and welcome back, everybody. We are here with entrepreneur, psychologist, and world record holder, Dr. Kizzy Parks. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Could you tell us a little bit about your recent achievement?
Yeah, you know, it's really funny. Like, as a little girl, I always loved like the Guinness Book of World Record, like the big book, and you would like go through it, or I would watch it on like TV, like different attempts. So I am now a record holder for most skips of a rope while wearing flip-flops in 60 seconds, and I jump more than 3 a second, so 182.
Oh my god. Wow. That actually is really
That's
impressive.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And so, in flip-flops too, kind of a dangerous undertaking.
Yes. Yes. So I have the plaque. I met with the gentleman who's been working for them for 10 years. He had the coat on and everything. It was really cool.
Wow. That sounds like such a dream come true. Definitely a bucket list item. I didn't even know that I have.
Well, there you go. Just pick one and apply and there you go.
So could you tell our audience a bit about your background and education so far?
Of course, Zenon. I say we because I talk about my company a lot. So please ignore that, who are probably like, does this woman, what is going on with her? So I'm a goofy person, so y'all are going to be on in for a treat. So you asked for my background, degree, things like that, right?
Yeah.
I have a PhD in industrial organizational psychology from amazing Florida Institute of Technology. I have a bachelor's in psychology from Alfred University, and I have a master's in IO psychology from the Florida Institute of Technology. And I always knew I was going to earn a PhD in psychology. I've always wanted to be a psychologist. I love the field of psychology. And I'm also an entrepreneur. Yeah, so that's kind of like a little bit about me academically.
Yeah, yeah. That's a perfect, overview. Let's see. I noticed you kind of emphasize academically, you know. What kind of things do you enjoy outside of your, you know, academic identity?
Oh my gosh. I love cryptocurrency.
Oh my gosh. That's so awesome.
I love it. I love working out. I like helping people. I like to read. But right now, my big areas are crypto. Oh, and I'm working on a new, I always have fitness goals. So I'm working on throwing a football 60 yards.
That is so cool.
So I have a football coach. Like, we meet on Sundays.
That is
and
awesome.
And I go to football practice. It's crazy.
So do you have a team and everything too?
No, it's just me. Because my goal is for me to throw at 60. So like, he works with me. And we work on the fundamentals and he breaks it all down to me. It's like so cool. Like my progression and what I know, like I can put my fingers on the laces properly, my approach, how I open up my arm, all this stuff. So that's a big thing for me.
That is so cool. I mean, it sounds like you're just always learning new things.
You have to. You have to, because if not, then I seem like life would be so dull and boring.
Yeah.
And it's perfect as a psychologist too, really.
Yeah. Like I definitely, it is perfect because I in the field of psychology, inherently there's the curiosity element. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're one who's like really into data, because like in IO psychology, there are people who focus all in data, or if you're, you know, connected to psychometrics, I can understand. Maybe you're not as curious, I guess. I don't know. But I'm just a curious person. And it just seems to me that the curiosity is vital in the whole entire field of psychology.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, thinking about, you know, those things about psychology that really draw us in, right? What first felt particularly compelling about industrial organizational psychology, maybe when you were just an undergrad at Alfred?
It's kind of funny because I thought I was going to be a clinical psychologist and have a practice and see clients. And what was really cool about Alfred is as an undergrad, I had a clinical patient.
Oh, crazy.
So we had like the double-sided mirrors, the student, it was students who volunteered. She received extra credit and the class and the instructor would watch. And we had like a telephone and they would call you if things came up. And that student, she stressed me out. She was like suicidal. She had real problems. I had to like have her sign a no suicide contract. And I was like, there is no way. I'm like, I can't even handle this one like student who volunteered for extra credit. I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to be a clinician. So having that realistic job preview was, it changed my life. And then I was taking around that time or shortly after, I took an IO psychology course and it reminded me of stories that my dad would share about work. And mm-hmm. I thought, oh, okay, this is a better fit. I don't need the grades that I would need to go into an advanced clinical program.
Yeah, those are crazy.
They are. And I wasn't the best student. I mean, let's just be honest. I was not the best. In psychology, I was. But overall, it took me like 3 years to get it together in undergrad. So then I applied to IO psychology programs in warm locations and got in. And the great state of Florida. And that's how it all came together. So the connection between what we had covered in that class and the stories from my father, who was an industrial engineer, it really led me down that path of IO psychology.
That is really interesting.
That's so cool. Because, yeah, who doesn't go into psychology thinking about clinical, right? Because it's all that most people really hear about.
Right. Like TV shows, on the internet, images. You never see, like, IO psychologists. I think we account for, like, 13% of the field or something really small. Wow. Like that.
No, I don't know. That's
maybe
which
smaller.
Is bigger even than you'd think, because I know, bigger most than intro I psych textbooks, I mean, as our one past interviewee put it, IO psych usually gets like a footnote in an appendix, if anything, right? So
pretty much. It's not really discussed, but man, do I love it. I love it. Yeah.
What kinds of questions were most interesting to you in your graduate research, like working on like a thesis, a dissertation?
So at that time, I was losing weight. So I had weighed close to 300 pounds, which is connected to my research. For those of you that may be wondering, where is this person? Where is she going with this? And so I started studying occupational health, occupational wellness. And so my thesis was a meta-analysis on the effectiveness of organizational wellness programs. So that was really cool. I got into organizational wellness groups. The APA, I think they have a work stress health or health work stress. They had and may have some kind of conference. I got involved with that. So it was really cool to be able to conduct a meta-analysis for my thesis to really start to hone in on occupational health and wellness. That was a really big area for about, maybe 5 years or so. My thesis is published. So that was published a long time ago. It was my first publication, but it was published. And so my dissertation was an extension. It was determinants of participation in organizational wellness programs. So I focused in on organizational wellness. And when I took my comprehensive exams, I know every program is different. In my program, we were asked to pick like what you consider as like your major area. And so I chose occupational health. And so the day two of my comprehensive exams, all of my questions were around that. So it was even outside of just my research, like I had to answer detailed questions on it too, in order to move forward in the PhD program.
I have a follow-up question for that. When you went into the master's, did you always have the intention of like going on and doing the PhD with them as well?
I knew I was. I mean, yeah. I didn't test well. I mean, I don't think I really tried well to try and test well. So I want to say that too. So I wasn't the most attractive candidate for any school. I earned my master's degree and I took 2 years off, but I don't remember when I applied. I like applied to the University of Central Michigan at some point in time for their PhD program. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't really remember when I did that. So what I ended up doing was I took the 2 years off and I was like, let me lose weight. Let me pay a bunch of debt off. Let me just kind of get my life together. And I made it known to the department chair at the time that I wanted to come back, because I knew that there were political moves that I needed to make, because I know many schools are not always fond of their master's students going on to PhD. Or some students would make the assumption that, oh, I earned a master's from XYZ program, so of course they're going to want me back. Yeah, no. And so once I did all of that, they were like, yeah, of course, you should apply. And so in totality, it took 4.5 years to earn my PhD. After my bachelor's, for those of you listening. So 4.5 after.
I'm kind of curious as well. What would an occupational wellness like intervention or program, you know, like you were talking about in your graduate research, what would that look like?
Oh, that's a good question. So I can talk about what some of them look like, but I have to preface it with some states have different laws around this. So the legality of what I'm going to explain may vary across our great nation.
Okay.
So because it's very important. So like, for instance, there was an employer who had a no smoking policy. So if you were an employee who smoked, you would be terminated.
Oh, wow.
And they would randomly test you for tobacco. And his viewpoint was, you know, I'm not going to spend extra money on healthcare. I want healthy employees at my job. And so I have the right to do this. And I believe this was the same company where they had really like extremely healthy snacks and things like that on site. You have like a less extreme example. There are companies who will put out these programs like, okay, we really want to help you. So if you go to our events, if you click this app, if you sign up for this program, you know, you'll be registered for a gift card, or maybe it'll somehow impact your health insurance plan. But the thing is, a lot of these are very disingenuous. And the entire reason that organizations do this is just to help their bottom line. Because for most organizations, municipalities, states, and other government agencies, one of their biggest expenses is healthcare.
Right.
For existing employees, maybe if they're paying out through a pension program. And so since healthcare is so high, what they will do is create these wellness programs. But then you got to be careful, because then many are now privy to health information about employees, which can impact their premium, which can impact their journey as an employee with that company. And so that's why I prefaced the way I did, because there's, you know, varying rules and regulations around it. But those are some things that they do. I wish I could say that many of these programs are in place because they really want people to be healthy and fit. I say that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see how that could be disingenuous for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. So even if the outcome ends up benefiting the employees, I guess, I don't know. In some respects, it looks like a win-win, but I can definitely see how the outcome could even end up being negative if, like, that kind of information ends up being, you know, piped through perhaps the wrong way and used for decisions about promotions and such. So,
I mean, it's ridiculous, you know, how it's all set up. And as a business owner, we offer an amazing healthcare plan to our employees. I mean, it's like amazing healthcare. And not too long ago, my rep informed me of this new option. And he was like, okay, if your employees spend less than this percentage, you get a certain amount of money back. And he's like, so basically, I, the entrepreneur, would benefit by having my employees not using their health insurance. So he was like, so do you know if they're going to, you know, really use their plans? And it's like, that's not a reason I got insurance. I didn't get insurance to save money and predict whether or not someone's going to have a baby, someone's going to need surgery. And so I was like, this is crazy. But, you know, then that entrepreneur kicked in and it's like, I totally see why this type of product was created, because that kind of dovetails this discussion about occupational health and wellness, because the objective is to minimize the utilization of the healthcare plan, right?
Yeah.
So I as an entrepreneur, I've learned even more around all of it. And if it doesn't feel right, I don't do it. You know, what's important to me is wellness. You know, we each have our own journey, just as I've had with weight loss. And so it's not something that I impose on my team or set up a disingenuous program. You know, I'm here to support however necessary.
Yeah, definitely. So it's kind of cool. You've seen like both sides of it. You've seen, or really all sides of it. You've seen both like the business owner side and the entrepreneur side and all of that from the perspective of someone who's also been formally trained to research all this. So that's pretty
cool.
Yeah. All right. So then I think we may have heard some hints at this, but what was it that led you to move sort of from an academia sphere into starting your own business?
I've always been entrepreneurial. So since I was a little girl, I would take golf balls from my friend's alley. So she had a house between a golf course and an alley. I would take the golf balls when I was in like elementary school, wash them, resell the good ones to golfers and buy Funyuns and Nutty Bars.
That's awesome.
So I've always been entrepreneurial. So when I was in graduate school, I really started to learn more about my currency, right? And that the chair of the program would speak extensively about what we could do in addition to teaching, or there were opportunities to use what we had learned even with just a master's degree or not even having a master's degree, and ways that we could be compensated. There was a lot of conversations about making money, which is probably unique to IO psychology. I don't know, maybe not, but I feel like—
No, I was gonna say, you know, that is so important, and it is definitely something I don't know if we talk about it enough in psychology, right? How to market yourself, you know, what is your value, those kind of things.
Yeah, we definitely do, especially the marketing ourselves. And so I jumped on any and all opportunities. I was a sole proprietor. I analyzed data for a consulting firm. I helped out another consulting firm with a project, actually a school, a very well-known online school. They hired me and I was considered 1099. So they fell under my sole proprietorship too. I did a lot of it to just earn extra money because I was broke, is why I did a lot of it. And because I'm entrepreneurial. So I remember at the time I was a graduate research fellow at now Patrick Space Force. And I was interviewing for jobs and I really didn't like the jobs I had interviewed for. I had interviewed for very typical IO psychology jobs, and I was actually offered a very, you know, cool occupational health job. And I turned it down and I didn't get the other job I applied for. And I was really grateful not to get it because I knew at that stage that I didn't want to go into academia. Because I had many people said to me, if you're going to go into academia, you need to work in a business department. You're going to make a lot more money. And then you consult and that's what you do. And so I was just like, no, I don't want to conduct research all the time. I don't want to do this. And then I started to look at how much money they made. And I was like, really? I went through all of this. I think at that time, I probably have $200,000 in debt. And I was like, so I'm going to go and work in a business department and maybe make six figures. And this is my life after all this hard work and drama and everything for a PhD. I was like, oh, hell no, I'm not doing that. So I was trying to, so I was just kind of like, I don't know. And then God took over the wheel because the director of research at Patrick approached me and said, I heard you're graduating soon. I would love for you to stay on as a contractor. And I was just like, okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's do it. And that was 13 years ago.
Wow. That's pretty cool. You don't hear that every day.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
So since then, you know, kind of hustling, being an independent contractor, entrepreneur, what does a day in the life look like right now?
Oh, a day in the life is nice because, so I own three companies. I have over 50 team members and we're primarily government contractors. So my companies have been awarded over $50 million in government contracts. So what's really cool is that I'm at this stage of where I'm on my journey to make sure I have happiness in my life and I don't run my companies. So a day in the life. So let's take today, because today was a great freaking day. So I woke up, I saw the sunrise here in Melbourne. I worked out with my Melbourne, Florida trainer, Andrea. Then I tried a new breakfast. That place was good. It was too good. I can't go there again. I'm going to get fat. So I was like, not going there. Had a good breakfast. I had some meetings. I had some, like, actually, I didn't really have meetings. I, like, checked my email. I'm in the middle of handing off more tasks to my team because I realized how much I despise admin tasks. And I am handing them off. So I did that. I had, like, a medical appointment that's, like, routine. Had a snack. Mm-hmm. My lunch was okay. It was a pretty decent lunch. I talked to a very special person on the phone like 4 times already. I got a facial. Don't forget that. That was nice. Wow.
Sounds like a totally like flexible day, kind of laid back.
So flexible. And I'm not done yet. Like I don't know. I'm going to go have dinner. I'm going to hang out, talk more on the phone, watch some Netflix. So, like, that's pretty much my day today. Oh, I bought crypto. I ordered crypto. I could go on and on. And it's still like, it's not even like 6 p.m. Eastern time. So we have a lot more of the day left.
How does that compare to, you know, when you were first starting up your businesses? Like, what would a day look like back then as far as all of the responsibilities and decisions that go into starting something like that?
It was chaotic to say the least. The thing that has become very clear in this entrepreneurial journey is how your business is such a reflection of you. Mm. And I was a hot mess at that time. And I had no idea what I was doing, but it also worked out well for me because all these opportunities came, I think, because people saw that I was genuine and cared, not that I was just this entrepreneur trying to take advantage of taxpayer dollars, because pretty much all my work has typically been government, not all of it. We've had clients like Walmart and other very well-known clients too. But the point is, it was very frazzled, very stressful, working all kinds of hours, I was distrustful. And so where I am today has come after a lot of hard work and putting systems and processes into place. So then I can pursue my new love, which is GovCon Winners. Even without a website, I have 2 paying clients. It blows my mind. And they pay really well too. And also pursue other things like crypto and throwing football. So yeah. Life before was atrocious. It was messy. Because the thing is about being an entrepreneur, I mean, like, there's a lot of books and, you know, when you tell people this is what you do, they make a lot of assumptions and they always have like tips for you, which is sweet. Like, that's so cute, you know, but it's like, there's no real handbook. You have to build the plane as you're flying it.
Right.
That's what you have to do.
And one analogy. Everybody's,
yeah. Everybody's challenges are probably so unique that you get advice, you know, and everyone's experience is probably quite different from each other.
It is. It definitely is. But it's like, it's so who I am. Gosh, I love creating businesses and I love being an entrepreneur.
That is so awesome. I kind of have like a follow-up question about that as well. So could you kind of like walk us like each of your 3 businesses that you kind of have right now that you're overseeing, kind of what is most interesting about them?
Yeah, of course. So K-Parks Consulting, otherwise known as KPC, is my first business that was created in 2000. It was incorporated in 2008. So at KPC, we provide a lot of professional services to the federal government, predominantly training and staffing, a little bit of IT. Then there is K-Parks, AMTIS, and AMPAR Services, both were created, I think in 2017 or 2018 is when they were officially created. And in the government space, you can create these joint venture companies to go after specific opportunities. So AMPAR Services holds our inspection work for the FDA, where we inspect all vape tobacco shops in America. And K-Parks AMTIS holds our acquisition training work with the Navy. And so for all three, they have contracts well over $1 million on each. And then my newest entity is GovCon Winners, where I help service-based small businesses learn how to find, win, and obtain profitable government contracts. So that's my latest endeavor.
So we've heard a lot about your work with like absolutely massive scale stuff. So from like the FDA all across the country to, I mean, Walmart is, I think, like the biggest employer in the country or something like that. How much of your work is like smaller scale stuff and how does that differ? So for example, how we connected with you in the first place.
When I helped out Dr. Boykin.
Yeah.
So Malik is a friend of mine.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
So I was helping him because he's a friend.
Okay, sure.
And because I met him back in like 2013 or something at an IO psychology conference.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So that was just me being nice, reaching out because I'm a kind person, and I love his story. I love the fact that he's the first Black professor at Brown. I love his music and he's just such a great friend. So that was more of like a passion kind of project.
Yeah, that's really cool. Okay.
So that's where that came from. Smaller clients. So that's like the cool thing is some firms, they may have a minimum like, oh, in order to work with us, you have to spend $75,000. And that's cool with us. It's like, we're like, whatever. So there's clients where it may only be a couple thousand. I don't work on any client engagements. So as far as who's our smallest client, I think the way to best put it is like my GovCon Winners is smaller because I'm servicing business owners or solopreneurs. And so it's so they vary. One of my clients is they bring in $35 million a year. The other one, she might bring in 5 to 10. The other one, I don't know what she brings in revenue wise, but they're much smaller than like a government agency.
Yeah.
But my three companies, we're open to working with any kind of clients.
That's so cool to have that kind of flexibility.
Yeah, you can really help who you really see that potential in or who's really exciting to work with. So it's really cool that, you serve all sorts of different orgs. A question that we had next, kind of thinking about, we know you mentioned, administrative work maybe isn't the most favorite thing, but thinking outside of that, what do you think is maybe the most challenging part of, your entrepreneurial endeavors so far?
The most challenging part has definitely been me. Recently, I uncovered, with the help of lots of friends, I really uncovered some things I kind of set up that I didn't really know that I set up. Because in life, we get into these habits, and especially for us who go on and earn just advanced degrees, or it's just like, it was just like this thing, like, you go, you excel, and it just became automatic. And so what has come about is just realizing that I set up things in my entrepreneurial space that weren't the best and that I really needed to change. So the admin tasks, just being too involved, the need to create an entity that excludes me and to charge properly. Like, sorry, people, but GovCon winners, y'all are going to have to spend like $20K a month to get me going forward.
Yeah.
Because it's just that my time is too valuable and it stresses me out when I work on tasks where I don't feel like I'm being compensated accordingly. And so some of you may be listening like $20,000 a month. That sounds crazy. Well, I mean, if I'm bringing you in millions of dollars of contracts, $20,000 a month is nothing. Yeah. And so I have this track record. And for small businesses who understand the value add, that's what it's going to take to work with me. And soon I'm going to have a $1 million program where the buy-in is $1 million. To work in this special mastermind. So getting myself out of the cog, setting up this new entity where I'm not doing everything. And most importantly, authorizing myself to allow it to happen and to go on this journey of finding things I really like and love in life.
Yeah,
that's really important because we get so wrapped up in our titles or our work or what we do. And we say things like, well, I don't have enough time, right? I got to work. I got to help my family. I got to do things for my kids. I got to do things for the dog and the cat and for my paper and my students and for grad school. And we always have these excuses or like, oh, I'll get to that when, right? And it's like, these are all just veils and excuses. And, you know, they're self-imposed. If you really want to do something, you're going to do it because that's how we operate as human beings. We know this from psychology. We know this from research. And so that's been the biggest part of this journey is authorizing myself to go on this journey of happiness and to remove this blondness. There's blonde there. I promise you, those listening, remove this blondness from the equation. Whew.
Yeah.
It feels good already.
That is so true. Even just thinking about the challenges of being an entrepreneur, what you mentioned are definitely some of the things that would stand out most, like what you talked about with knowing your worth to other people, that it's an investment. That must be incredibly challenging to do. What I really, really appreciate you talking about is like, you know, a lot of times in those advanced degree spaces, like you were saying, it's like, okay, I feel like it's a lot of time this narrative of you have to work really, really hard for a really, really long time. And we don't talk about when/if that ever stops and you can have more of that balance, you know what I mean? For family, for pleasure, you know? That really stood out to me because it's something I'm trying to balance myself. Which, speaking of, that kind of just leads so perfectly into our next question, but how has your relationship to work-life balance changed throughout your career? Like, how do you set that boundary?
You know, I have worked, especially in like the past couple of weeks, maybe the past like 10 days. Okay, maybe the past week. I have altered this. So initially there was really, it was just whatever, like hair on fire. I was always in panic. There's a fire mode. I was always like that. Now I did things, I had fun, all of that, but there was no balance. So what I ended up doing, especially of recent, is that I focus in on my priorities. So for instance, it's very important that I work out. So I typically work out 6 to 7 days a week. It's very important that I eat a certain way. And so I make sure that I do what I need to for that. I also understand that I have to give myself permission. I have to authorize myself to relax in an inexpensive way because, you know, I need to put more money towards my crypto. So I'm like watching more Netflix and, you know, going for a facial, doing things like that. So for me, balance is not about like 50-50 or I stop work at 5 p.m. Like, that's great. You know, the thing about balance is, can you look yourself in the mirror and is there happiness? That to me is what balance is about. Because I think sometimes people use that term to mean, oh, I'm giving all I have to somebody else in addition to what I need to do to pay the bills. And I don't see it as that. It's like, well, what makes you happy? You know, and sometimes hanging out with your family is not going to make you happy. So maybe you need some you time. But if you can't accept that and you won't authorize it and you are still in denial, then it doesn't matter how many vacation days you have, or if you're working from home, or even if you only work 4 days a week, it doesn't matter. You're still going to be unhappy and feel like you don't have balance. Mm-hmm. So for the way that I live, I like to be able to do anything I want to do whenever I want to do it. I do. And that's how I live. Like, it's very, very important. I like to just make sure I'm doing great things and contributing to this great world and remaining healthy and having fun and continuously finding things that make me happy.
So how has your graduate training impacted how you've developed and run your businesses? Is there any ways in which, like, your graduate training has informed, or I guess like benefited, your business?
Graduate school was the most difficult, life-changing experience in my just journey. It was so hard. Oh my gosh. It was so hard politically. It was so hard with what we were tasked to do. There was so unpredictable. I wasn't fully funded because, remember, I had like $200,000 in debt.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of, and not, that was also from Alfred too. So what graduate school taught me was, number one, how to bullshit so damn well. Oh my God. You know, to be able to just talk on the fly, to be able to incorporate citations and support your view or what you want others to believe, how to best do that. I learned how to analyze data. I learned really important skills and about concepts that I have since used to sell to the federal government. I learned how to deal with such unpredictability in a professional setting. So, like, it's one thing, like, undergrad, whatever, was chaotic. My life was chaotic. But there were times when, you know, I would see a professor in the hallway and it's like, oh, by the way, there's this project for you. I have it. It's due by Monday. And I was like, what the hell is this? And so there was a lot of that kind of stuff that happened. So it prepared me well for the uncertainty and last minute needs of different clients. And it just was such high stakes because you're graduate program is responsible for whether or not you finish. So, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And I've never felt that level of stress since. Like, I've met 4-star generals, I've met 3-star admirals and generals, and I have presented to political appointees. I've spoken in front of hundreds, if not thousands, of people. None of that. Oh my goodness. None of that
compares. Huh?
No, yeah, seriously, to graduate school. I'm like, no, seriously, nothing in life has been as challenging as graduate school.
Wow.
Nothing. Nothing. Can't nothing wait. In life. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It felt like boot camp often at good old FIT, but I'm happy for it.
Yeah.
I'm so
you
happy
do it again.
And so grateful. Oh, of course.
Yeah.
And again and again and again and again and again, because the thing is, at the end of the day, they nurtured my different. They nurtured her. They didn't say, well, occupational wellness, nobody here in the program studies that, so maybe you should transfer. They never said that. They never did. When I was before I earned my master's, I said, I want to do both. I want to intern and complete a thesis because it was a terminal MS program. And they're like, okay. And I interned at Lockheed Martin and I completed a thesis, which I published while I was in the middle of work studying for comps when I re-entered into the PhD program. And then even during the PhD program, they were like, okay, great. You still want to do wellness? That's awesome. You're involved in these professional organizations outside of Society for Industrial Organizational Psychologists. They fostered that. They encouraged my participation in other endeavors, other professional groups. Like, they never said, yeah, I don't think you should do this.
Yeah.
And that was so comforting. My chair, Lisa Steelman, Dr. Steelman, who's known for feedback, organizational feedback, you know,
yeah,
it's, she's the big feedback guru. And so, just always supportive of me, always, always, always supportive.
That is so cool to hear that you found a program that really did align with those values that you mentioned, even just at the very beginning, of following your curiosity and maintaining a flexibility in your interests, being able to do the internship as well as your research. That is so awesome. How has studying psych influenced both, you know, your personal life, interacting with people in the world, but also your philosophy in the business world?
Man, with people, I'm really curious. I love meeting them. I'm a Midwesterner. I'm originally from the west side of Michigan. So I have that kind of Midwest vibe, which I have to be careful of because Miami is nothing like that. And I don't talk to strangers in Miami. So, but it's impacted me in that I'm able to unpack and understand. Mm-hmm. So just in a day-to-day situation, I got it. What's actually really helped me more with in an interaction kind of environment, as well as an entrepreneur, and I encourage everyone who's listening, is including the two of you, my esteemed, amazing host, and that is to take an improv class. Even if take a virtual improv class, that has really helped kick things up a notch, and that I understand the psychology, or I'll like text Dr. Boykin because of his background. I'll text him like, hey, can you tell me why this just happened? Because I don't know. I mean, I'm so in entrepreneurial land that I'm very disconnected from a lot of research. And that's really helpful, but the improv has helped take it up a notch. So in very weird or uncomfortable or just unpredictable situations, I know how to respond, as well as I can then, from the psychological side, start to process it.
Mm-hmm. Yes and, right?
Yes. Yeah. You do the yes and. And when people just say crazy stuff to you, like, oh, I love your blonde hair. Like, so you're naturally a blonde. And I'm just like, yes, I am. I am a blonde. Like, okay. You know, and it's just, I just run with it. Or business requests that people have. It's like, yeah, sure. Let's do it. You know?
Yeah, that is awesome. I write yes and on a sticky note sometimes. I put them up on my wall because I think it's like a really exciting kind of life motto, you know, roll with it, right?
It is. And, you know, on top of it, there's a sales professional. He does more than sales, social media. He was on a TV show. His name is Grant Cardone. He's the kind of person, either you're gonna love him or you hate him. I personally love him. And one of the things he really practices, and I've heard him do this in Clubhouse, he does this in his material, is that he yeses. So if even somebody said, your hair is purple, yeah, you know, he'll go with it. And he doesn't say yes as in the sense of, I am agreeing with you that my hair is purple. It's about how you make that person feel. And I find that especially us with advanced degrees, sometimes we get so cerebral, we forget that it's about how a person feels. And so if a person doesn't feel really good about themselves because they're around you and you come across like a know-it-all, or they say something and you're constantly correcting them, or they say something and you say no instead of yes and, you're going to have an issue. I mean, it's a test. You should try it out.
Yeah.
Go, next time you're at Walgreens, CVS, Walmart, Meijer, wherever you shop, Target.
Maybe love the Meijer reference.
Kmart. You got to go with the Meijer, right? Because we love some Meijer in Michigan.
Yeah.
So next time you're there, I promise, if you go to the cashier and the cashier asks you a question like, do you want paper, or how's your day, or and you just totally go against what the person's saying, their body language is going to change.
Mm.
I'm telling you, because nobody wants that. Nobody wants the no. They want the yes and. So
yeah, that acceptance, that's really important. Right?
They do. They want that acceptance.
What's one piece of advice you would give to a current undergraduate student who wants to do what you do someday?
You know, explore. Explore. You can do it now. Like, explore. Take this time in your life to figure out what you like. You know, look up what it means to be an entrepreneur. Read some books. Watch some YouTube. Go on TikTok. Go on Instagram. Go on Triller. Contact entrepreneurs. Realistic job preview. That's what this part of your life should be like. Is just gathering, trying things out. It's like, imagine you're at the biggest buffet and it's like really good buffet food, not crappy buffet food. Yeah. And the food is like all free. And like, we're talking like 500 items, like Vegas style buffet. Mm-hmm. That's how you need to view life. That you're at this huge buffet and your job is just to try different things. Don't get too full now. You know, I didn't say there's a limit on this buffet. You can go back as much as you want. Just, you don't need to do it in 20 minutes. And just try out different things in life. And reach out to those who are in the space that you're interested in, because the most important person in each of our lives is ourselves. So if you reach out to an entrepreneur and say, hey, John, I see you own our local plumbing company. I would love to learn more about your journey as an owner of a plumbing company. I'm telling you now, John would love to talk to you to tell you all about his journey.
So what is one, let's say, book, podcast, movie that you would recommend to somebody who's interested in kind of that entrepreneurial work, or that might be just one of your personal favorites you think has a cool moral?
Anything by Gary Vee.
Gary Vee.
So Gary Vee, if you Google Gary Vee, you'll find him. He's probably in a Jets jersey or hat, anything by him, whether it's on LinkedIn, it's on Instagram, it's on TikTok, anything by Gary Vee. He has a podcast. He has several YouTube channels. Here's the thing about him. He immigrated to this country when he was a little kid from, you know, former Soviet Union. And his father owned a liquor store. And he worked in that liquor store majority of his life. And then I want to say after he graduated undergrad, he took it over and turned it from like a $2-3 million a year business into like a $50 million a year business. And he was one of the very first people to sell wine online. And I believe in the great state of Michigan, you can't buy wine online through the mail, but that's okay. So that's one of the many, many things he's done. Since then, he has taken over social media in addition to starting, growing a slew of businesses. And why I recommend him and what I like about him is his grit as an immigrant. What I love and adore about him is his positivity, his emphasis on love, his emphasis on giving, his emphasis on happiness. The fact that here is this man who just gives away all this information. He doesn't ask you for anything. You don't have to pay anything. He's all over social media. Most of his social platforms, he has at least 1 million, if not more, followers. Mm-hmm. He's just so inspirational, and the advice that he gives is top notch. So whatever your platform is, all of his content is catered to that platform. So if you're a LinkedIn person, you're going to get more business kind of Gary Vee. If you're into TikTok, you're going to get more TikTok themed kind of content. If you're into Instagram, you're probably going to get more of him swearing because he is known for that. he does have swear free, I think, content on his podcast. He has a ton of books out, bestsellers. I think he has like 5 books. I just truly adore him. And I actually had the opportunity to even ask him a question on Zoom several months ago. And I just, oh my gosh, he's just so, so amazing. And so What I think is the most value added piece and why I recommend him, this is very important, is because he doesn't sugarcoat. He knows, and he puts out there that being an entrepreneur has become sexy, because there was a point in time where people were like, what do you mean you want to be an entrepreneur? Don't you just want to get a job and a paycheck? And so nowadays it's like, oh, I'm an entrepreneur, right? I have an Etsy. I have my Instagram. I got my marketplace. I'm an entrepreneur. And everybody's saying that they're an entrepreneur or they want to be an entrepreneur. But the thing is, nobody wants to put in the work. Everybody wants to put out the flex, right? The money phone and the trips and the yachts and the boats. And you may think, even with COVID, And so Gary Vee keeps it real. He really talks about and gives advice for all ages, all different kinds of people. And it's that type of advice that you really need to hear, but you don't always want to hear. And that's why he's so amazing.
That is so cool. I mean, I'm not even, you know, entrepreneurially spirited, and I'm interested in what he would have to say, honestly.
I mean, you should listen. That's all too rare.
Yeah, and he asks for nothing. He truly does. I mean, he's so sweet. Like, I'm a member of his text community, and the other day his text was like, hi everyone, you know, just checking in, you may need to see this. And then it's like heart, heart, heart. I mean, it's just like, oh my God, I love you. Like, he's so sweet. Like, yeah. He's just so, so kind. Gosh, his content is fire. You know, it's so good. And just check it out. And I would say the last piece is, because I think we mentioned it before we started recording, and that is, he's really big around branding. And so he always says, watch what I do, mimic what I do. And so he's a master at branding. And so even if you're a psychology major working toward a PhD, there's still nuggets you can take away from him by observing how he markets, where that still applies to us. There are people with PhDs in psychology on killing it on TikTok and YouTube and other channels.
All those things you admire so much about Gary, I mean, I feel like have been beautifully showcased in our interview today so far. Absolutely love the positivity, the curiosity, the generosity of giving us some of your time today. Really means a lot. So thank you so much for that.
Anytime, it's the least I can do. And like, if I can be of help, you know, to listeners, the best way to contact me is on LinkedIn. You know, just DM me, and somebody from my team will figure out a way to connect us. But I mean, I'm very sincere, you know, like, I feel that in this space of psychology, often we're kind of pigeonholed. Like, you go on and you get this great job in academia. Maybe you take the route of like, you have a best-selling book, or you become psychology famous, or you get all this funding, woo, and tenure and all of that. And there are job paths that aren't necessarily discussed, such as working for the federal government. Oh my God, maybe joining the military with your advanced degree and getting paid and having your loans paid. Or, oh my gosh, maybe you work for Army Research Institute. Maybe you become an entrepreneur. Maybe you don't do any of it and you decide to create video games. But I think it's really important that in this space, we not only consider the other opportunities and paths, but also don't forget about social media and marketing and all these other areas. They apply to us too as psychologists. So reach out if I ever can be of help, you know. Look up Kizzy Parks. I'm there to help you.
Thank you so much to Dr. Kizzy Parks for bringing all of that incredible energy and authenticity to the program today. We hope that you guys enjoyed it as much as we did and got to learn as much as we did. And in the meantime, check us out on Twitter at Preoc Podcast, Instagram at Preoc Podcast, or Facebook, we're just pre-occupied. You know the website, pre-occupied.com.
Shoot us an email, hosts@pre-occupied.com. Find us on your favorite podcasting platform. Send us to all your friends. Rate, review, like, follow, share, subscribe.
And we've actually been getting quite a few emails lately with recommendations for who we might want to talk to next. So please keep sending those in. That's how we found, it's part of how we found Kizzy, honestly. So keep sending us the people who you think would be a great fit. And that's all, folks. I don't know. We don't have like a thing that we say. So see you next time on Preoccupied. Bum 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 b